Tanya Guquanto, who is a member of the Ontario College of Dietitians and Dietitians of Canada, has consented to once again give us myths and facts about diet and cancer. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome back Tanya Guquanto.
Well, thank you for having me back again today. And I've changed the presentation a bit. We've changed it to talk about myths and facts about diet and cancer prevention. So when I talk about diet and cancer prevention, I'm also talking, these guidelines I'm going to go through are also about cancer prevention and reoccurrence of the cancer as well. The guidelines I'm going to go through today are based on more than 4,500 studies from around the world. And the group or the organization that we use these guidelines from are it's called the American Institute for Cancer Research. But I want to stress that all the studies are from around the world. It's not focused solely on North America, which is very important. What they've discovered is that many cancers are preventable, and diet and lifestyle do make a difference. So there is something that we can do. So in the news, this little comic talks about, yes, we hear one day margarine's good for you, the next day we hear margarine's bad for you. We talk, you know, on the internet, on infomercials, you find a vitamin mineral supplement that will cure all diseases. Specifically, the focus a lot is on cancer. And again, in the corner talks about red meat, which is very controversial. So what we're going to do today is understand the relationship between lifestyle and cancer risk, and again, the prevention of reoccurrence of the cancer, clarify confusing diet and cancer messages, and take action with changes in your diet that can improve your health and lower your cancer risk. So the most dangerous myth, number one, is everything causes cancer. So if you read newspapers, talk to your neighbors or family, you always hear of something new that is related to causing cancer. But the fact is, there are only a few major causes of cancer. The second myth, which is very dangerous, is cancer is unpreventable, because it leads people to believe that they can just eat whatever they want, not exercise, sit and lead a very sedentary lifestyle, and that's not what we want. The major causes of cancer are diet and tobacco, and through the research, they found that 60 to 70% of all cancer cases can be prevented by changing what we're eating, by controlling our weight, because as we age, we tend to start gaining more and more weight. Exercising is very, very important, and not smoking. So what I'm going to focus on is diet. And the promoters, those are the substances or the actions we take that promote cancer, are alcohol, charred meat, so burnt meat, obesity, animal fat, and sedentary lifestyle. And I know that all of you are familiar with these promoters. So this is just a little diagram, and you've probably seen this, you know, reading through materials, that you have these healthy cells, and, you know, over 10 to 20 years, they're bombarded with all these promoters, the previous slide. And then eventually, those healthy cells, the DNA changes, and eventually over time, it becomes cancerous. And what we want to do is prevent that from happening. And even if you've had cancer, you want to stop any of your other healthy cells from progressing to cancer as well. So the guidelines again, and I know you've heard it, if you've heard my presentation before, the guidelines have not changed. So I'm going to go through them. I'm going to go quickly through them right now, and then we're going to go through them a little bit more detail in the presentation. So you want, number one, choose a diet rich in a variety of plant-based foods. Very, very important, key. Eat plenty of vegetables and fruits. And like I said in the last presentation, I cannot stress enough of what the research is showing about vegetables and fruits. You want to maintain a healthy weight and be physically active. Very important. Even the research now is showing more and more that maintaining a healthy weight is very important, and exercising. Drink alcohol only in moderation, if at all. Select foods low in fat and salt, and we've heard that before. That's not anything new. You want to store and prepare your food safely, and you don't want to be using tobacco in any form whatsoever. So possible protectors to our bodies, to our healthy cells, you're looking at vegetables, fruits, beans, and whole grains. And what these plant-based foods contain are phytochemicals, antioxidants, and dietary fiber, which research is showing that it protects our healthy cells. And physical activity is actually a separate factor on itself in terms of being a protector to our healthy cells. So phytochemicals are found in plant-based foods, so your fruits and your vegetables, your legumes, and also your whole grains. So don't forget whole grains, because that is a plant in itself. So some phytochemicals are, and I'm just going to list through them, and I'm going to go in some of them in a little bit more detail. So the first one is sulforaphanes in cabbage, cauliflower, broccoli, and broccoli sprouts. And these specific vegetables actually are highly associated in terms of cancer prevention and the prevention of reoccurrence of cancer. Allicin in garlic, onions, and chives, very, very important. But what I want to stress here is that you can come across garlic pills. And the research is showing those supplements do not have the same effect as if you were to use the garlic when you're cooking in itself. Limonene, found mostly in the peels of citrus fruits, very important. And we recommend that people cook with citrus peels. So if you're baking or if you're cooking with different types of meat or food, then to add them to your meals. Isoflavones and saponins in soybeans. I'm going to go through a little bit more detail in terms of soy, because that's very important in terms of prevention of cancer and reoccurrence. And lycopenes, which I know you've heard before, a lot of research in terms of prostate cancer prevention. So lycopenes, because that's the big thing, really, that they've seen a huge difference in terms of making a difference in terms of cancer prevention and reoccurrence. So you find it in tomato products, like tomato juice, V8, juice, spaghetti sauce, ketchup, also guava, grapefruit, papaya, and watermelons. And scavenges, what it does is it scavenges free radicals to reduce tissue damage, and I'll go into a little bit more detail about that. It inhibits, what they found in some studies, it inhibits multiplication of prostate cancer cells, so that's significant in itself. But some people might be tempted into taking supplements, but what they're finding is that supplements in some of the studies appear to increase cancer risk. So to take a lycopene supplement doesn't mean that you're, you know, helping yourself. So if you can, take the lycopene in your food. So how much do I need? So, you know, I'm talking about lycopene, but how much do I need per day to get the benefits of the lycopene? So a lot of the changes that were found in these studies, they looked at 30 milligrams of lycopene a day. And I'm just giving you some of the portion sizes of what 30 milligrams mean. So 3/4 of a cup of tomato sauce, 12 fluid ounces of tomato juice, 8 raw tomatoes, and 4 cups of watermelon. So it's achievable if you plan it and organize it in your day every day properly. I'm going to go into soy right now, which is very important. The belief is that in Asia, because soy consumption is quite high in males, that's why the level or the incidence of prostate cancer is quite low. So they believe that that soy in itself plays a very important role in preventing cancer, and specifically prostate cancer, and actually also decreasing the risk of it coming back. So again, the phytonutrients that are in there are genistein and diazine, and what it does, it helps to lower your hormone levels in your bloodstream. And it restricts other enzymes associated with cell growth. So it's an inhibitor. It stops things from growing. And in again, a lot of, some of it is in test tubes as well. They believe it causes direct tumor destruction by starving the tumor. So it's not feeding the tumor, it's actually starving the tumor. And some sources are tofu, soy cheese, soy nuts, and soy milk. Some chemical substances, antioxidants, are also the same. They play a similar role to phytonutrients. You find them in plant-based foods. And the ones that are most familiar to us are vitamin A, beta-carotene, vitamin C, vitamin E, and selenium. I'm going to go through a little bit more detail about them and where you can get these antioxidants. And what they believe is that it, over time, our healthy cells are bombarded by these free radicals. And the research is showing that these free radicals are actually quite unstable, and they want to attach themselves to become stable. So they attach themselves to healthy cells. And over time, the belief is that it eventually, those healthy cells change DNA structure, and eventually they become cancer. So what antioxidants do is they actually attach themselves to the free radicals, and then they're expelled from the body. So it stops that whole process of changing the healthy cells. So I'm going to go through each one. Beta carotene, which is converted to vitamin A. The sources are carrots, spinach, cantaloupe, apricots, pumpkin. The foods that I've listed here are high concentrations of beta carotene. What also, dark leafy vegetables is in another category of beta carotene. The research is showing that it may reduce prostate cancer if combined with a diet rich in fruits and vegetables and low in fat. And supplements themselves, again, have not been shown to have beneficial properties in relation to prostate cancer. So the research showing is that you're better off eating a low-fat diet with high in vegetables and fruit, but not taking a supplement. Like, the supplements are not going to give you that beneficial effect. Vitamin C. Sources of vitamin C are citrus fruits, potatoes, broccoli, sweet peppers, kale, cabbage, cauliflower, tomatoes, kiwi, strawberries. You can see that vitamin C, I mean, you can find it almost in a lot, in almost all fruits and vegetables. The belief is that it may prevent the prevent formation of free radicals that could cause DNA damage. It helps repair damaged DNA, and test tube studies observe it stops the proliferation and survival of cancer cells. Now, the studies that are out there are not as strong of an association between vitamin C and prostate cancer, but they're still looking into it. But they do show that in terms of other cancers, it does prevent the reoccurrence or prevent cancer. Supplements containing 25 to 500 milligrams taken once daily appear to be safe, but they believe the research was showing a supplement, if you take a supplement, 1,000 milligrams a day, actually has the reverse effect. So you want to be able to take your vitamin C from what you're eating, or take a multivitamin, which has vitamin C, but not a lot of vitamin C. Vitamin E. Again, another antioxidant, and you find it, it's a fat-soluble vitamin, so you find it more in foods that have fat. So your vegetable oils, your nuts, your seeds, wheat, germ, and eggs. Studies show vitamin E between 50 to 100 international units inhibit prostate cancer. And this, I've seen this through some studies, that the 50 to 100 international units is a standard size that they use or supplement. It lowers the rate of conversion from latent to aggressive forms of prostate cancer. So that's very important to know. And what the way it works, or the belief, is that it lowers your hormone levels in your bloodstream. And what they say is that you want to look, because there's so many different types of vitamin E, there's the natural forms which are more available to our body. So that's what they recommend, is that they really recommend choosing a natural form. It tends to be a little bit more expensive, but it's more available to your body. And I highly recommend, if you want to take a supplement, because taking vitamin E and maybe those amounts, you may not achieve through diet because you're trying to limit the amount of fat that you're taking in. You may want to talk to a pharmacist and find out what's the best for you, because they really know their stuff. Selenium, which is a mineral, is found in whole grains, Brazil nuts, seeds, wheat germs, and eggs. And selenium, and you've probably heard this, there's more of an association between prostate cancer risk and selenium. There's a good relationship between them. Again, it scavenges free radicals. It's an antioxidant, so it goes after those unstable cells and eliminates them from our body. What they found is that low plasma selenium is associated with a 4 to 5-fold increased risk. And as you age, your selenium in your blood, in your plasma, tends to decrease. So it's really important that you keep that level high. And again, if you're taking supplements, some research studies do say take a supplement. Other physicians and other dietitians say don't take a supplement because it's very easy to get the amount that they recommend, which is 200 micrograms, which is equal to 2 Brazil nuts a day. So instead of taking a supplement, you take 2 Brazil nuts a day and you get your amount that you need. But again, it's up to you what you decide if you want to take a supplement. Say you just don't like Brazil nuts, so you may consider taking a supplement. So we were talking about antioxidants and phytonutrients and what they mean and why they're important. So in step one, as you can see, there's a healthy cell attacked by free radicals. So you want the antioxidants to first stop there before a healthy cell changes DNA, changes, and becomes a precancerous cell. So it's not a tumor, but it's precancerous because it's changed DNA. So at step two, what is it that we want? We want the phytonutrients because it slows down the step two, which is a precancer cell attacked by promoters, becoming a cancer cell. So there, it's really important that the phytonutrients play a role. So that's why it's important to have your fruits and vegetables and plant-based foods, because you can see that there it stops cell change and cancer. And again, when cancer cell progresses into a tumor and then becomes a cancer tumor, I still say it's very important, and we still recommend, you know, patients eating well, because you don't want, once a tumor is removed, you don't want it coming back, nor do you want other parts of your body to be exposed to cancer risk. So it's very, very important. Dietary fiber is another important compound in plant-based foods, because the research shows that the fiber does make a difference in terms of cancer risk. Fiber supplements haven't shown that much of a difference in terms of lowering your cancer risk, just because fiber supplements don't have the vitamins and minerals that you would get from the food, from your fruits, your vegetables, your whole grains, and your legumes. You want to aim for 25 to 30 grams of fiber daily, and what that means is you start at least with a breakfast cereal that has at least 5 grams of fiber, okay, in a serving size, and that's where label reading is very, very important, to look at the fiber content on your cereal. Also, another example is toast. A slice of bread should have at least 3 grams of fiber per slice, so at least you're getting 6 grams. So you're starting off the day on a good foot because you're getting enough fiber. And the belief is that it may bind to toxic compounds and carcinogens that are resting in our bowel area and then eliminates it from our body. So fact, eating 5 or more servings of vegetables and fruits could prevent at least 20% of cancer cases. So that's significant. So if there's one thing that you can do, if you're not doing right now, is at least getting 5 servings of your fruits and vegetables per day. And I always hear, oh, 5 servings? That's a lot. It really isn't. Because 1 cup of leafy vegetables is 1 serving of a vegetable. So if you think about a salad, you can at least get 1 serving of a salad, or 2 servings. Same with a fruit. Half a cup of a diced fruit is 1 serving of a fruit. And fruits and vegetables are both equally important. I know there's a lot of information out there saying that the fruits are not good, the sugar is bad for you. Fruits and vegetables all have very important vitamins and minerals that are protective to our body. So recommendation is choose a diet rich in a variety of plant-based foods, and you want to eat a lot of fruits and vegetables. Again, when you look at your plate for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, 3/4 of that plate should come from a plant-based food. Everyone doing that right now?
Yes.
So legumes, examples of legumes, because I didn't go in a lot of detail. Lentils, split peas, kidney beans, chickpeas, soybeans, there's a variety out there that you can choose to eat. Excellent source of vitamins, plant protein, and fiber, so it's a good alternative to a meat if you want to have more variety in your meals. And again, you know, if you're not eating them, you want to start off slowly, drink a lot of fluid, because it does create a lot of gas for some people. There's also products out there that help in terms of decreasing the amount of gas. Myth: a little bit is plenty. Sure, I ate all my vegetables. It doesn't mean that if you have just 1 meal a day and you have your vegetables, that that's going to benefit your body. Well, yeah, it might a little bit, but you'll get the full benefit if all your meals include fruits and vegetables and plant-based foods. And only eating like 3 Brussels sprouts doesn't mean that you're going to get the benefit. You need to eat them all. You need to have a good serving size. So, vegetables, fruits, and whole grain products should be a major component of your diet. You're going to hear that again and again and again, because that's what the research is showing. Cancer prevention and cancer risk reoccurrence prevention decreases when you're eating most of the plant-based foods. It was very interesting because I was looking at, because usually my presentations to, you know, groups is usually cancer prevention, so a lot of people don't have cancer. When I was looking at guidelines for cancer reoccurrence prevention, the guidelines were the same. So it was quite interesting to see that both what you can do before and what you can do after is the same. It makes a difference. You want to maintain a healthy weight and be physically active. And the research is showing that that's really, really important. It's actually considered separate, like a separate component in terms of cancer risk prevention. And you want to follow Canada's physical activity guide. I didn't have any to bring with me today, but I'm hoping that I can mail it to you, Fred, or to McCool to hand out, okay? Really important. And it could be as little as 30 minutes of exercise per day. If you haven't started an exercise program, really important to talk to your physician about that. You don't have to do 30 minutes all at once. The research is showing if you do 10 minutes in the morning, 10 minutes at another time, 10 minutes in the evening, it still makes a difference. The guidelines actually recommend an hour activity a day, and out of the 6 days a week, and out of that 6 hours, at least an hour per week is vigorous exercise. So what I'm saying is that if you're not exercising, even 30 minutes of just walking makes a huge difference. And I know everyone's exercising right now, right? Yes. So you want to choose activities you like and can do comfortably. Really important to do something that you're going to enjoy. A lot of people like doing activities with other people or in a community center where you meet people, you can talk, you can socialize and still do your exercise. Do whatever works for you. Another myth that confuses people, alcohol, it's a health food or poison. And I know I talked about this last year. When it comes to cancer risk, we tell people do not drink. Like if you're drinking, stop. But if it's an important part of your lifestyle, like it's something that you enjoy and it helps you, it's a stress reducer, then we say, well, drink your alcohol, but just follow the serving sizes that are for men and for women. So for women, it's one drink per day, and for men, it's two drinks per day. The difference is that men have more of the enzyme that breaks down the alcohol, and women have less. Okay? And I'm going to say this again, you can't save it up until the end of the week and say, well, I didn't have my alcohol during the week, so on Saturday night, I'm going to have them all. Don't even ask, it doesn't work. We'd like, but no. In terms of heart disease, the research shows that red wine does or is associated with reduction of heart disease. That's why there's that confusion, because the two different research shows two different things. Recommendation, you want to select foods low in fat and salt, and you want to choose a modest amounts of appropriate vegetable oils. Fat and prostate cancer risk, high association, and I'll go through that. But what I want you to remember is that although there are fat-free foods, they still have calories. And you have to be careful. You have to look at portion sizes, because sometimes the portion size is so small that if you actually eat the amount that you're usually eating, the calories do add up, okay? And also some fat-free foods, they just replace the fat with sugar because it just tastes good. And so they still have calories. You still have to keep that in mind. So for the good fats, I'm going to talk about good fats and then we'll talk about the fats that are unhealthy and that you should avoid, or at least look at lowering the amount that you're eating. So the good fats are polyunsaturated fat. So you find them in safflower, sunflower, corn, and soybean oil. They contain essential fatty acids which cannot be produced by a body, and these are the omega-3s and the omega-6s, which I'll go into a little bit more detail. Very healthy fats, important to our diets. Monounsaturated fat, found mainly in olive oil, canola oil, and avocado. Both these types of fats are good for not only cancer risk, but also for heart disease. So omega-3s, like I mentioned before, are polyunsaturated fat. They're essential fatty acid, which research is strongly recommending that we take in, because we don't take enough of the omega-3s. The omega-6s, which are also polyunsaturated fat, we tend to get enough in our diets because you find them in foods that are already made. But what we are looking at is increasing omega-3s. So omega-3s Fish sources are salmon, sardines, herring, mackerel, and halibut. And plant sources are the flax, wheat germ, canola, and olive oil. And the research is showing that it induces, if you take enough omega-3s, it induces cell death. So again, when I talk about cell death, I'm talking about a cancerous cell death. It suppresses cancer cell initiation, which is a good thing. And it competes with arachidonic acid is omega-6s. Omega-6s are believed to be harmful to our bodies, too much of the omega-6s. So that's why we say omega-3s are really important in terms of taking. So you want to incorporate one of the foods on a regular basis to achieve omega-3 fatty acids. So you want like at least 1 ounce of walnuts, half a cup to 1 cup of cooked soybeans, 1 to 2 tablespoons of ground flaxseed. Now the ground flaxseed is really important because it's more bioavailable to us than the actual seed, the seed not ground. So it's really important to ground the flaxseed. And I'll talk about a flaxseed because that's where the research is going right now in terms of prostate cancer risk. It's a plant estrogen source. It works to block the tumor growth, inhibit angiogenesis, which means it inhibits the growth of blood vessels that would carry a cancer cell to other parts of our body. So again, the research is showing a good thing about flaxseed. Appears to bind with testosterone and lowers the circulating levels. And that in animal studies, they found that the flaxseed inhibited growth and progression of prostate cancer. So these are all positives. That's why just having your flaxseed every day, 1 to 3 tablespoons of ground flaxseed daily makes a huge difference. And it's very easy to achieve because you can add it to almost everything, to your cereal, to baking, to your beverages, because it doesn't have a strong taste. Anyone taking flaxseed? Good. The fat that we want to get away from and the association between cancer risk or prostate cancer and fat is the saturated fat. So that means fat from animals. So you want to avoid meats that are high in fat in terms of meat, butter, and dairy products. You'll find saturated fat in processed foods like convenience foods. And saturated fat is usually solid at room temperature, so you know that it's saturated fat. And again, it appears to be related to increased risk of metastatic prostate cancer, so avoid it as much as you can. Trans fat, which is a process where they take a healthy vegetable oil and make it into a solid, has now been shown to actually act like a saturated fat. It might even be a little bit more harmful than a saturated fat. So you want to avoid that. So you find those in convenience foods. When you see partially hydrogenated vegetable oil on the ingredients, avoid, because that's just a hydrogenated oil. And what they like about hydrogen, why companies use it, is because it's very stable, and your crackers and your muffins can stay on the shelf a lot longer by using it. But what we're saying is avoid those foods. And if you see it, it's almost like adding it on to a saturated fat. Yep.
What about palm oil and coconut oil? Are they giving some bad reputation?
Yeah, they are, because they tend to act more like a saturated fat, so you want to avoid those as well.
No.
Coconut oil is actually, we tell you to, because coconut oil is like a saturated fat. It's actually solid at room temperature, so it mimics. You just want to avoid it or not use a lot of it. You want, for meat, now I'm going to talk about red meat a little bit in more detail because there's a lot of controversy. Limit serving size to 3 ounces per day. You want to choose fish, poultry, or meat from non-domesticated animals. So that means like deer or moose or rabbit, because they just tend to have less fat because they tend to roam and use their muscles a lot. Now, in terms of red meat, we recommend, or the guidelines recommend, no more than 2 servings per week. And the reason being that they tend to be higher in fat, and it's not the good fat, so you want to minimize how much you're eating. And the serving size is 3 ounces per day. But say you want to eat more than that, we highly recommend that you just follow your portion sizes, because right now, in one serving, if you were to sit in a restaurant, and I've said this before, is that you might be eating up to 3 servings of meat. Because one serving is 3 ounces, which is the size of the palm of my hand, which is pretty small. Men tend to have bigger palms, so you really can't use that, so you use a deck of cards, okay, to think of what a serving size is, which is not a lot. So if you choose to eat red meat, then really follow the guidelines in terms of portion sizes, which is very hard, because it tends to taste really good. So, but fish, again, there's a lot of controversy. You've heard about salmon and the wild salmon and the farm salmon, and, you know. Well, and I do have a little article here that the dietitians receive, that there are certain dietitians that work in those fields, and they say they are healthy. We've always known that farmed fish are higher in fat than wild fish. What they're saying is that they're not sure if the way we cook foods, the amount of the PCBs that they're talking about is the same between both after they're cooked. So that's one issue that they have to look into. But they say that the levels that they found are not unreasonable and not unexpected. They've always been there, and that they're still healthy to eat because they still are under the guidelines of the WHO organization. So if you're concerned about it and you still want to eat the farmed salmon, then it's fine. The only concern is that if you're eating fish or that farmed fish, like some groups of people eat fish 3 days a week. So that, I'm sorry, three meals per day, then that's when there's a concern because the PCB levels will be raised in their bloodstream. So in our case, I don't think all of us eat three salmon meals per day. We don't have that concern. So vitamin D and calcium, this is a category on its own. Vitamin D is believed to be important in protection of prostate cells, so very important. So sources are salmon, trout, sardines, fortified products like soy milk, cereals, or even low-fat versions of milk, like the 1% or skim milk, and sunlight. But our ability to absorb vitamin D declines with age. So this is where the controversy comes in. Do we supplement with vitamin D? Because as we age, we absorb vitamin D less. So that's where a multivitamin might play a role, and it's important to talk to your physician about that. But we have to be careful also because we have calcium and vitamin D have a relationship. So if we're taking too much calcium, we're more likely to have less vitamin D as well. So that's why they say in terms of calcium and prostate risk, you want to make sure that if you're taking a supplement for calcium, you don't want to exceed 2,000 milligrams per day. Usually if you have osteoporosis, it's 1,000 milligrams per day, just broken up. But just be careful with your calcium. And again, with vitamin D, if you feel that you're not getting enough, you should talk to your physician about that and see if you should be on a supplement for vitamin D. Yeah, no. What they're saying is don't exceed 200 milligrams per day, but don't go less than 500 milligrams. So don't avoid calcium because of the concern, but just don't get overzealous and start taking 2,000 milligrams. Like say, for instance, someone is eating, you know, their dairy products all day per meal, plus you're taking a supplement at the same time, you have to be very careful. And that's why physician is really important, or your pharmacist, just to get a good idea of what you should be taking. Myth, you must give up your favorite foods. So I've told you all the foods that you can eat and what you should avoid, but does that mean you have to give up your favorite foods? Let's say you have a sweet tooth or you like certain foods. What we're saying is that you want to look at your portion sizes and you want to look at how many times you're eating per week. So there are no foods you must give up. You want to look at the amount. The amount and proportion of various foods in your diet is what counts. So you can't have three slices of cake per day, but maybe you can have it, you know, once a day or once every other day. Recommendation, store and prepare food safely. That's really, really important in terms of you don't want food sitting in the fridge or the freezer for a very long time because the food won't have all the vitamins and minerals over time. They slowly disappear. So it's really important that you want to look at the foods that are in your fridge, and if they've been there in a long time, then it's time to get rid of them and buy more fruits and vegetables. Also, you want to go to a store that you know the turnover rate for your fruits and vegetables are constant, that they're not sitting there for a long time. Another, you want to prepare your food safely. And the reason being is that I talked about charred meat as being one of the promoters of cancer. So in this case, what I'm going to do is give you tips for safe grilling because there's a lot of carcinogens that are formed when you're barbecuing. That's really, really important. And this, a lot of the studies are used, actually, are found in test tubes, but the association is quite strong, so they're actually telling us to be very careful about the way we barbecue our meat. So you want In terms of meat, it's the amino acids that at high temperatures tend to turn into carcinogens. So what they're saying is that you want to remove the fat on your meat before you barbecue. You don't want juices to drip down so the flame comes up and touches your meat. You want to use foil in some cases because that might prevent the flames from actually hitting the meat. Another way is cook your food or your meat before you actually grill. And using marinades actually lowers the risk of these heterocyclic amines from forming and becoming carcinogens and being bad for us. This only has to do with meat. Grilling vegetables and fruits on your barbecue are fine. They don't form these carcinogens. Myth: vitamin mineral supplements are the best insurance against disease. Every day you find another person promoting some sort of vitamin mineral supplement, actually on the shopping channel now, being home, being a stay-at-home mom and working, you know, part-time at the hospital. I tend to be exposed to a lot of things on the shopping channel. So now there's a new product that they test the amount of free radicals in your body, and then these vitamins and supplements that you pay for, they're quite expensive, will help you reduce the number of free radicals. Well, the research that we've looked at have shown, some research says, yep, a multivitamin does make a difference, and a lot of research says, no, a multivitamin doesn't make a difference. But what we do know is that the research that use the actual fruits and vegetables and plant-based foods, they actually do make a difference in terms of cancer risk. So what we say is, you know, eat well, have a very good foundation, and then if it's a real concern, then take a multivitamin. That's not necessary to take 20 different types of supplements to get health. It doesn't show that. You can have a poor diet, and taking a vitamin or supplements is not going to guarantee you health. So it's really important to have a good foundation. There are some cases where supplements are necessary. Say you've had surgery, you have osteoporosis, then that's when a supplement's important. But in terms of prevention of cancer and the reoccurrence, it's the fruits and vegetables, the foods that do make a difference. So a variety of plant-based foods provide best balance for nutrients and cancer-fighting dietary substances. We cannot emphasize that enough. Eating a healthier diet means a dramatic change in the foods you eat. What we say is that if tomorrow you decide, well, I've heard this presentation, I'm going to follow all of her guidelines, and I'm going to eat healthy, and that's it. You're less likely to stick with that if you just choose one guideline, work with it for a couple of months, and then go on to change your diet or change something else in your diet. So one thing you can do is, like, eat your fruits and vegetables minimum of 5 fruits and vegetables. The average that you actually need is 9 servings per day, but 5 fruits and vegetables a day will make a difference. Everyone eating 5 servings of fruits and vegetables? I only see a few hands. Yeah? So then choose another guideline. If you're not exercising, then you start exercising. Small changes make a big difference. People and clients that I've worked with, the clients that just do one thing at a time and just stick through with those changes, in the long run tend to lose weight and are healthier than, like I said, tomorrow, you know, throwing everything out of your house and then, you know, starting to change and make a whole change to your diet. Say, and this is just an example. So say you used to eat fried chicken leg and breast, French fries, and salad with dressing at lunchtime. So you can see that it's like 900 calories and 50 grams of fat. That's almost a whole day's worth of fat right there. And 900 calories, that's quite significant. But an improved lunch by making a small change is eating baked skinless chicken breast, baked potato with sour cream, so we're not even telling you to get rid of your sour cream, and salad with reduced calorie dressing. You're saving yourself quite a number of calories, and look at how many grams of fat. I mean, that's significant by just making a few changes. Like, for instance, these are teaspoons, actually, that you're seeing, and 1 teaspoon has 5 grams of fat. So we're saying, make your muffins at home, so you have 1 teaspoon of fat. But if you were to buy one of those store-bought muffins, that's 4 teaspoons of fat. So 4 times 5, 20 grams of fat right there. That's quite significant. Again, French fries, have a smaller serving size. If you really, really want your French fries, you can see that choosing a large order versus choosing a side order makes a big difference. So again, regular ice cream, choose 1 scoop instead of 2 scoops. So small changes. We're not asking you to totally eliminate the foods, but make those small changes. And then eventually, you may make the change to, well, I don't need my ice cream and I don't need my french fries. I can choose something else, like a baked potato. So I'm just going to go through the guidelines again. You want to choose a diet rich in a variety of plant-based foods. You want to eat plenty of vegetables and fruits. You want to maintain a healthy weight and be physically active. Drink alcohol only in moderation, if at all. If you're not drinking, you don't have to start drinking to get the benefits in terms of heart disease. Just don't drink. Select foods low in fat and salt. Store and prepare food safely. And do not use tobacco in any form. And if you're smoking, stop. If you know somebody else smoking, tell them to. My conclusion is small changes make a big difference. And there's some websites written there that are helpful in terms of information. And I want to thank you for having me here today. Thank you.